Sarah and Becca's just setting up. We have some lovely individualized badges for you. So on your way either out or back in after coffee, do pick up your badge from Scott. Scott, hold up a badge that looks like. There's one of them. There you are. Each individually illuminated by Scott. Are some of them with sequins on as well?
Sequins on. And LED lights.
Sewn by hand. Lovely. While all of that chit-chat was happening, Soren Beck has finished, so thank you. Soren Beck, asymmetric access to desktop computers in the clinic. Notes on doctor's glances at the screen while patients talk. Off you go.
Yeah, thanks very much. I'll be talking mainly about how doctors turn to their desktop computers during consultation. My study is not nearly as applied as Tom's just was. But I think it has some applied potential, and I'm hoping to, well, develop this perspective in time. The overall purpose of my study is to investigate how the desktop computer is integrated within ongoing patient interaction. And the study is based upon 52 video recordings of general practice visits in Denmark. Four doctors participate, two of them are male, two of them are female. Now, computer usage is actively integrated with patient interaction at all times when computers are used. That's important to stress. But for this study, I concentrate on the ways in which participants turn to the desktop computer. There's been quite a lot observational, coding scheme-based, and ethnographic research on the ways in which doctors use computers. I think from a CA perspective, we might miss some details in such studies. They're rather sparse on details. Also, some of them tend to have, in my opinion, some cognitive shortcomings. For instance, they interpreted that if doctors look at computers, and sometimes it must be because they need a timeout, they need a break from the interaction. That's not what I find, I think. Within CA in particular, David Greatbatch, of course, and his associates have examined just how remarkably close talk and computer typing are coordinated during the prescription phase. Christian Heath and other have documented that if this is a medical record, right, and if the patient presents for problems and the doctor looks at the patient at the medical records, then the patient's talk become disfluent. My aim is to supplement knowledge about how computer usage is made relevant. Now this appears to be, from the study, it appears to be both a very real and a very important challenge for the participants, and I think it's a core TA research question as well, how is something made relevant. So this goal has directed my attention here to two sorts of asymmetries, which I'll address today. First asymmetry, in popular wordings, reads, it's a doctor's personal computer. It has to do with the patient's rather limited access to the information on the desktop. Second, asymmetry reads that it's the doctor's computers, but doctors can't always use them at will, because I find that they also have limited access to their computers, at least during specific phases or activities and exchanges during consultations. So, addressing the first asymmetry, of course there's, the question here is, how do the participants treat the computer as the doctor's computer? Of course there's a physical setting here, and you'll see that from the video clips in a moment, that this setting favors the doctor. The doctor sits very close to the computers, between the computer and the patients. And patients sit quite far from the computer, so it's rather difficult sometimes just to read what's on the computer. But more importantly, computer usage or computer attention is always initiated by the doctor. And computer usage is overwhelmingly oriented to as a single person activity. Now, patients are sometimes invited to code you, but it's rather seldom. It's the case, for instance, with if there's test results or a charge, and they may be invited to view, but it doesn't happen very often. What does happen often is that patients peek at the screen while the doctors use the computer, and this happens during all computer activities. And what's interesting here, I think, is that when patients peek at the computer, their gaze are closely coordinated with the doctor's gaze. And that's what I'd like to demonstrate to you too. So I've chosen an excerpt and I divided in two sections. First section shows how the participant get to view the computer, and the second excerpt shows how they get away from viewing the computer. So here we go. At this excerpt here, they're getting ready to schedule the next appointment. And the patient proposes that they meet on a Tuesday because she's not working there. But really what I'd like you to notice is the way they move and the way they sit on this playlist.
Nogle gange om tirsdagen har jeg fri hele dagen.
Ja, så måske næste tirsdag.
Ja,
der er også en mulighed der.
Okay, so you'll notice how the doctor first looks at the patient and then looks at the computer. You'll also notice that the patient looks at the doctor and then looks at the computer, and of course this computer attention is doctor initiated. You'll also notice, I find that more interesting, how this the physical setting favors this asymmetry. Mm-hmm. You'll see that the doctor has a desk chair with wheels under it, so she can easily turn around, look at the computer. The patient, she sits in a chair here, which is solid here, and she has to turn her position 90 degrees in order to view the computer, and she has to lean over the desk in order to see what's going on. They do that for quite a long while. They sit like this for quite a long while, 30 seconds or so. And when they move back from this position, I think there's a pretty good illustration of the asymmetry that I'm trying to get to. In the verbal exchange, the doctor points to a potential problem that might conflict with the scheduled next appointment. But again, what I really like to ask you is to notice how they sit and how they move. You see this? Oh. Okay, once more. Okay, so you'll notice that, the doctor looks at the computer and then she moves just slightly backwards but maintains focus on the computer. And while this is going on, the patient makes a rather interesting move. Very swiftly, she moves, away from the... She turns herself 90 degrees. She erases the gaze on the computer. Instead, she gazes at the patient, the doctor, and she places her hands in her lap. So accordingly, by the time the doctor looks at the patient, he does that here. The patient sits in a proper listening position, looking at the doctor and not at the desktop computer. To me, that appears a rather strong indication of an orientation towards asymmetry 1. So, addressing asymmetry 2. Quite often, or at least sometimes, turning towards a computer is treated the relevant next move. In particular for filling out prescriptions. That is, sometimes a patient may ask for a prescription renewal, breath control pills or something like that. And then doctors will just turn around and fill it out. Or they'll say, okay, fine, and then turn around and fill it out. but also quite often turning towards a desktop computer is, well, is treated more troublesome next move. And in particular, this is the case for checking or adding information to medical records during problem presentations. And doctors make its attendance relevant using verbal and bodily resources. Now, verbal resources are accounts, and bodily resources range from quick glances to torso movement to desk chair movement and full body movement. And I find that these two resources coincide. But interesting, the verbal resources are often withheld for moments where resources, where the bodily resources prove insufficient, where there's a need to explain that this is what I'm doing. I find that doctors, they attempt to accomplish stepwise and smooth transitions. And here are two of the ways in which they do that. They're rather interesting. They may maintain gaze with the patients while moving backwards. Remember, there are wheels on the chair, right? So they look at the patient, listen to the patient, look at them, and then they move slowly backwards just to check if it's okay to check the computer. And if the patient doesn't object or anything like that, I'll show you an example where a patient actually objects, they'll turn towards a computer. Okay? Now the other strategy is to, listen to the patient and then quickly glance at the desktop. Sometimes repeatedly, and sometimes patients go on and on and on. And this is actually one of the tricks that doctors employ when patients just go on and on and on. I'll show you both of these things. Here is the very slow desk chair movement. In this example, there's a patient who tells a story about how his previous doctor was about 69 years old. And therefore just a kid compared to the patient himself. At the story punchline, the word kid, and thus the possible completion point, the doctor begins slowly moving backwards. Please notice this movement.
Tænd bare en top, og jeg skal lige prøve at forklare dig, hvad det er, der er galt.
Yeah, you see the trick here in action. Actually, it turns out that the patient has more to add, right? He adds something here, but by that time, the doctor has already turned towards the computer. I guess it's the moment beyond, I guess it's too late at this point. So the doctor provides an account that he says he's going to explain to the patient what's wrong with him. And of course, this account is embedded in an instruction to put his clothes on. Here's an example of, sometimes they do this movement too quickly. They don't check, visually check with the patient that it's okay to attend the computer. It's from an opening of consultation, and you see here where the doctor's movement is sort of interrupted by the patient talk. Patient talks about a blood test about a year ago, and the doctor clearly wants to check his computer. Let's see. Okay, once more, please look at the doctor's gesture. Okay, so as this doctor commences to withdraw and his chair and his turn his torso, but not as slowly as in the other example. The PA signals, the patient signals that she hasn't quite, finished her turn. She does this with a turn initial yes, and a declaration that she intends to ask him another question. And importantly, she raises her finger. Of course, that's a powerful resource to catch someone's attention, perhaps also to correct someone. And accordingly, The doctor stops his movement and he falls back into what Adam Kenden has described as a typical listening position, that is sitting like this with a finger on your what's that, cheek.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, so the quick glance, I'll do this quickly. We might revisit the first example here, because as you remember from the first example here, the doctor turned towards the computer in order to look at a calendar. But in fact, the computer attention is preempted by the characteristic quick gaze. If you look at this.
Så måske næste tirsdag.
Ja.
Okay. As you can see, it's very brief. In seconds, it's it corresponds to 0.8 seconds, and in talk, corresponding only to one or one and a half syllable of talk. Doctors quite often preempt computer attention with sub glances. It would take an eye tracking investigation at least to tell if the doctors actually read anything. I'm considering doing this, but I suspect that they don't. I suspect that they don't read what's on the computer within such limited time. And in fact, the screenshot that the doctor looks at here, it's not a calendar at all. So I suspect that this is a way to signal to the patients that they wish to disengage from them and then instead attend the computer. I find support for this in the analysis in the fact that such glances commonly coincide with doctors asking for permission to attend the computers. We should see that in the two final examples here. This is very brief. Here's a patient that has requested a referral to a specialist, and the doctor is unsure if he can accommodate the request or not. So he asks for the patient permission to investigate the matter. As he does this, he glances at the computer. Check it out. Again, it's very brief. Less than a second, and in fact here it's produced in overlap with his asking for permission. Same is the case in the last example here. It's a bit more lengthy because I think it can illustrate a number of things. That's why I've given you a handout. So I'll play it, and if you follow the transcript, I think it would be helpful.
Jeg har haft det før, kan jeg fortælle dig. Og der fik jeg noget salve, nu kan jeg ikke huske, hvad det hedder.
Det fik
jeg
stille ikke.
Line 15 now.
Yes, det er lige, hvad hun skrev.
Ja, lige præcis.
Second page. Time to go that much into detail. Maybe it's not such a good idea to give you a lengthy example in a language that you don't know at all. So I'll try to summarize my points. Overall, this shows, as I think many of the previous examples, that it's difficult for doctors to attend their desktops. And it's difficult because patients sometimes refuse to be interrupted by this action. We see that in line 7. The patient clearly refuses to be interrupted and doesn't accept the doctor's account. The doctor actually accounts that I will just check on the computer, and the patient responds by raising his voice. He says, I've had it before, I can tell you. Perhaps it shows why doctors want to attend their desktops. She wants to look at this. She makes this accountable. She says that the other doctor says the same thing as the patient. I think that perhaps this is yet another asymmetry, right? So there's the patient side, and then there's the medical record side. So whose is more trustworthy then? Perhaps that could also explain why it's socially problematic sometimes to attend the medical records. Now, it also shows that the space between the patients and the desktops is socially significant. Where the doctor places herself, displays her stance towards the patients. We saw in line 10 that once she has failed to attend the computer, she returns to attend the patient, and she distanced herself quite far from the computer. I find that a lot, actually, that if they attend the computer, if they can't attend the computer, they'll move the desk chair quite far from the computer, really to display, I'm looking at you, I'm not looking at the computer. Finally, of course, it shows the gaze that preempts the computer attendance, and that the case is accompanied by a request for permission to attend the computer. So, in conclusion, I think that I found on studying how computer attendance is integrated, I found that there are two asymmetric access to desktop. Well, it operates on two levels. It operates on the level of patients and doctors alike. I find that doctors employ available bodily resources to accomplish stepwise transitions. You've seen two of them, and these resources coincide with verbal accounts. I think, well, now addressing the applied potential here, I think that there's much debate about should doctors use computers or not? Is it a problem? is it arrogant or so? There's much debate about that. And a common voice in that debate is that doctors shouldn't use it, and it's arrogant to look at the computer instead of engaging with the patients. But frankly, when I look at these examples, it doesn't strike me as particularly arrogant the ways in which they do that. It seems to me that doctors, at least sometimes, they work very hard to make desktop usage relevant within the ongoing patient interaction. And I think that, I'm not there yet, but I think that if I could continue this, if I could see which reactions do doctors meet when they attend the computer in one way or another, perhaps that could develop into some sort of consciousness about how things operate, and it might support smooth interactions and patient satisfaction, I hope.
Thank you.
That's it. Thank you.
Okay, good. Time for comments and questions, Ms. Arambeck. Yes.
That's very interesting. I noticed that I think practitioners are particularly well trained. There's a paper by Rhodes, Italo, that announced some of that. We're looking at the use of computerized parametric checkers in that region. And there were two quite extreme ways that computers used in the consultation. We used Chigov's body tool to analyze the data. So we found that in some consultations, the practitioner put their feet and torso facing the computer console and just turned the hair and let the body tool communicating with the patient. And in the other extreme, it was more like that, where the screen was available for the patient to see. And feet and torso facing the patient's computer.
That's an excellent paper. I think I get the same impression as I sense that we have, that people often talk about either the doctor is engaging with the patient or the doctor is looking at the computer. And I find that there's so many in-betweens. For this study, I've chosen simply to look at the ways they get from clearly looking at the patients, clearly looking at the computer. I don't know if that's That was just a choice I made for this study, but I think it's equally as interesting to view, well, all the in-betweens. For instance, the doctors will quite often they will type prescriptions or they'll look for online information, and then they'll keep looking, they're gazing at the patient. I don't know if that at all answers your question. Actually, I've fancied that for the bed study, and there are of course lots of examples. They'll be looking at the computer, but they'll be engaging with the patients. What I find interesting is that they turn the gaze around all the time, every 5 seconds, so whenever it's relevant for them, for corresponding patients as well.
One brief question before we cross over to the next speaker. Yes.
So Pages done a while ago and Kant, and it used to be known as the triadic relationship between the doctor, patient, and interaction. And part of that is the sense that saying doctors shouldn't look at computers, which is bizarre since people are spending millions of pounds designing information systems for them to use to do better diagnostic work with these people. And one of the things I think would be, which is sort of hinting at, is when looking at these screens, there's a sense of which what information is up the screen at what time, what information is sought for, and how long does that information take for it to turn up. Now, the stuff done on other information systems and dispatch of goods and stuff like that, it's the same sort of thing. It's the use of information and the embedding of that information in the rest of the relationships.
Yeah.
I think it would be worth looking at that rather than the computer as a sort of distraction or something central, but actually embedded in a key part of the interaction.
Yeah, and as a resource to achieve common understanding.
And all sorts of things go on.
Yeah, I think it's it's narrow-minded to view the computer as a restriction alone, because to me it appears that it does all sorts of great things.
Okay, we have to stop there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.